Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone from the entertainment world. My guest today is David Michael, a musician who calls Colorado home. David, welcome to the program.
Hi, Simon. What a pleasure it is to meet you finally. Let me interject real quickly that our meeting here is a partial product, almost entirely, of the social engineering of Billy James, who you know, of Glass Onion PR, and I wanted to give his name a little shout-out because he's done some of the background work for getting us together.
I like Billy. So how is the weather in Colorado?
It's been a mild winter, Simon, and then all hell broke loose this week. We had record low temperatures on Monday and Tuesday. I thought it was all gone. It's snowing now. It's pretty if you don't hate it.
Right. Actually, I live in Mississippi, and we haven't had any snow, but boy, it's been cold. So cold that the school district officially canceled school. I think they called it a snow day just in support of people like you in Colorado.
Closing school in Mississippi for a cold day. You're a bunch of wusses down there, Simon.
Indeed we are, and we're proud of it.
Well, that counts for a lot.
You've just released a new CD, Low Bid on a Dream. Can you tell us a little bit about the CD?
Well, first of all, I think it sounds great just technically in terms of the audio. It's recorded across the way here in Boulder, Colorado. Beautiful studio called Coop Studio. Scott Roach and his team, you know. And John McVeigh, this magical producer, engineer, his ability to apply Pro Tools, which is the software package of note across the industry now, makes it easy for artists to go in and work. Because what we had in Boulder, because it's an artful, intellectual, creative community, we had a choice of a handful of ringers to bring in besides the band. So we had some really hot players, and I'm just so grateful to have had these guys beside me. Can I name a couple of them?
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, myself on the acoustic guitar. The songs I wrote all myself, and I think it's a great bag full of songs. James Hahn is a brilliant keyboard player. We pulled in the rhythm section from E-Radio that broadcasts weekly out of Boulder. And that would be Christian Thiel on drums and Chris Engelman on bass. Just tremendous, just terrific people, you know. And a couple of ringers, some people that we brought in as guests that show up here and there on the disc. And what a great time. John Kapler, a co-producer with John McVeigh. And we just felt like it was a triumphant project. When we were finished, we thought this is just exactly what we wanted. So we got it.
I'm curious. How long did it take to actually create the CD and bring it to market?
You know, this is probably a project that took the best part of a year. I know all winter long we were driving back and forth to Boulder to the studio, you know, and with Pro Tools and with multiple tracking in the studio, you start getting tracks scattered around here and there and start having to develop a strategic plan for bringing things to an end. You start looking at people's schedules way ahead, and it is not the epic of the great old set up the band and take a run at it that went on in the earlier days of recording. Not to say that this is better, but it's different. The digital revolution in the studio has truly affected the way people behave about recording. I love it. And certainly, again, John McVay, the producer engineer, his ability to ply the studio has just made us all very much at home. And what a good time. I'd sure like to be able to get started on a second one here.
Well, I mean, I'm looking forward to it, and I encourage you to do a second one.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
And actually, on that note, why don't we sample a track from the CD? How does Downtown Toledo sound to you?
That's the opening cut, and I was thinking you'd never ask, Simon. Roll it. I'd love to hear it.
Okay.
Hear me on the radio. I do discs on the radio.
This is Downtown Toledo.
I got a room in Downtown Toledo. Lord, let me tell you about that. Room with no view in Downtown Toledo. Let me say where this is at. Got to be willing to do some biz to keep shoe leather on this here cat. Slinking along past the Commodore Perry, I got the shades and the shoes. Cruise on down by the riverfront, pick up on some of the news. Check out the action, catch up on the scene. See who's got what I can use. Best you slip your razor way down in your boot. Long five will get you 10. Some son of a gun waiting, wild-eyed and ready to shoot. And there's a nasty little number in a bright red dress that her love to slit your throat in Toledo. I got the key to a funky room low down in Downtown Toledo. Singing this junky little tune, getting around in Toledo. Six shine and a slick tattoo, uptown in Downtown Toledo. Let me tell you about that. Room with no view in Downtown Toledo. Let me say where this is at. You got to be willing to do some biz uptown in Downtown Toledo. Uptown in Downtown Toledo. Uptown in Downtown Toledo.
It really is a most splendid tune, and every time I listen to it, I'm reminded of another song. I just can't quite place it. Is there a story behind Downtown Toledo? Hello? Uh-oh. I think we might have just lost David. David, are you with us? David? Well, it looks like we might have temporarily lost David Michael. While I try and get him back on the air, let's play another tune. This is the actual title track from the album, Low Bid on a Dream.
Here's those tears on the pillow. Here comes that damned old moon.
Here's that well broken heart that fell all apart so soon. Here's a wake up call to the know it all who figured what you said was the answer to the question of the speed left in this bed. I guess that it was all in my head. I know it seems like the low bid on a dream, but here's the pay for the piper. He plays the same old tune. Here's that well broken heart that fell all apart. Ooh. Here's a love that's gone and a chance to pawn that fake silver lining. Join the crowd in the smoky cloud with the ladies dressed in green. Try to drum up something for my head. Comes that damned old moon.
David, are you back with us? Apparently not. Okay. Let's take one more musical break and hopefully, David can get back into our switchboard. If you're listening, please hang up and dial back in. I rather like David Michael. I think his musical style is an interesting one, although it seems fairly rooted in the world of blues. He also steps out on this CD and goes where a blues musician would not normally be expected to go. There's one track in particular on the CD that really caught my attention. It's very, very different. It's called Heart Let Up On Me. I'll let the listeners decide what they think about this particular track.
I could use a razor on my whiskers. I could use a shower and a meal. I could use a little turn of luck, I guess you'd say. And I'd be more than grateful for any kind of deal. There's a damned stretch of dusty highway playing out behind me, and a chain of broken promises, as far as I can say. Seems like someone's leaving home. Just about the time they settle down. Seems like someone's on the road. Just another stranger blowing into town. Heart, let up on me. If there's something left to you, this cowboy's head is still a being free. Can't you see? Fight that upon me. I could use a Carolina whisper. I could use a dancer on the floor. Double shot of something I walked out on yesterday. See me to my empty room and gently close the door. Damn the restless soul that must have taken up inside me. Only there to drive me, as far as I can see. Seems like someone's leaving home. Just about the time they settle down. Seems like someone's on the road. Just another stranger blowing into town. Heart set upon me. If there's something left of you, this cowboy's hat is still being free. Can't you see? If anything is left of you, this joker's had his run of being free.
Okay, I think with a bit of luck, we might have defeated the snow and bad weather. David, are you back with us?
I'm here. I've heard you well all along, so I'm not sure what's happened to the transmission. How am I coming in, Simon?
Oh, you're coming in loud and clear.
I'm not sure whether that was your end or my end.
Okay.
Sure my end.
Let's rewind a little bit.
Sure.
Let's go back to downtown Toledo.
I'd love to.
Is there a story behind that track?
Well, you know, Simon, there's a character kind of like this guy that shows up in a lot of my songs, kind of a low-rent, self-delusional street guy that is a little bit of a slicker and thinks he has things figured out. And I think that if you walk in the streets of downtown Toledo, you can't have too much figured out. But this guy has a shoe shine and a slick tattoo. And I passed through Toledo very, very briefly 100 years ago in radio, WOHO there, and it made an impression on me. Just because of how mundane and blue-collar it was, and yet at the same time, the Maumee River flows in there from the Great Lakes, and so you see the ocean-going steamers as far west as Toledo, Ohio, and cobblestone streets down by the river. And I was impressed as a young broadcaster and a young songwriter, so that's it, nothing very important. Simon, a guy playing harmonica, Dexter Payne, is just brilliant. He did all the Reed work in the album, all the Reed saxophones. He's a clarinetist. And he grabbed the blues harp and twisted it around through the changes on downtown Toledo just magically. So I'm endlessly indebted to him.
Oh, I think the harmonica on that particular tune is just so fitting. I mean,
isn't that it? Yeah. It's a diatonic harp. It's a blues harp, and yet the changes aren't conducive to that. And so it took a real good bit of contorting and persuading on the part of Dexter Payne and his instrument to get him to do it. He took a couple takes and we were thrilled. It's just a little bit different than any blues harp you'll ever hear.
I want to ask you a question. I know that in your life you've played in various sandboxes. we'll just leave it at that for the time being. What attracted you to music? Have you played, you know, since you were a young man, or what?
You know, Simon, in in high school and then going into college, I was involved with a couple vocal quartets that had really good coaching and really made a serious effort. And it gave me the opportunity to hear over and over again real tight harmonies and to account for the different voices in a chord and where those voices are heading into the next chord. And the ability to voice chords and to hear them is something that early on I was tutored in. And the transfer of that sensibility to a guitar is not a perfectly easy one, but if you apply yourself a little, you can do that. You can take some sensibilities that are born from standard harmony and bring them over to a guitar and take the guitar uptown a little ways.
When did you start composing? You know, it's one thing picking up a guitar and, you know, and learning to, you know, play along with, you know, with whatever song is on the radio. But when did you actually start to put those notes together yourself?
You know, Simon, I think it was probably in the late 60s and probably in Houston. I had a beer-drinking, barrel-chested, brawling pal that just sang and played just his heart out and wrote very, very charming songs, songs not as intricate as some of mine. But then an old pal, beer-drinking buddy, Daryl Murphy, that influenced me, I was working on some little tight, nervous little instrumentals, and he was doing these wide-open songs and getting the girls. And I thought, well, hell, that's what it's... Yeah, so that's kind of where that led. The first thing I was doing was trying to charm the ladies. I'm still trying. What are we doing wrong here?
You know, I've asked that question of countless other musicians, but no. I have to give you credit for having the most unique answer.
Maybe it's because I'm ducking and weaving here. I am not sure. But so the songwriting is certain. The songwriting has gone on, you know, for well over 40 years now.
Do you find that you start with a guitar riff, the elements of a tune, and then create the words, or do you go for the words first and the music comes naturally afterwards?
Yes, I mean, those are the perennial questions that surface in songwriter groups and in people trying to diagnose where it comes from. So you'll find me, as we all understand, that the greatest stuff, where it comes from, is a mystery. Regarding mechanically how a song begins, Paul Simon, we have pretty strong feelings about getting a bass line established and following a bass line. And I was writing poetry before I wrote songs, Simon, so I tend to be kind of haunted by a figure of speech. I'll be dogged by a figure of speech and carry it around in my cranium for weeks and weeks. You know, Bob Dylan said that about himself. He says, and then finally you just get on that pony and ride it like a bucking horse. You know?
And so, interesting that you mentioned Paul Simon. Is he much of a musical influence to you?
Well, I mean, it's hard to deny that he has brought to his music that certain kind of high depth sensibility that was not in Dylan's music. You know, I mean, Paul Simon is a New York cat, and he'd been uptown to downtown a little bit. You know, I never really had an affectionate regard for his personality, but God, he should have left himself a wonderful legacy of songs. I mean, if I was stuck on a desert island with, you know, 10 albums, when one of them might be Ryman Simon, God, what a great album.
Actually, I don't much care for that particular album, but I do love Paul Simon. Yeah, it's just that's just not one of my faves.
And it's hard not to admire him for what he has done with his wealth after he's established himself and going in and doing these various eclectic albums with world music people. You know, I brought in with Elizabeth Blackmon Ensemble up in Boston, you know, Hugh Mazzucchelli and Miriam McCabe. And, he has continued to try to keep growing, and certainly that is so much of what it's all about, isn't it, Simon?
Oh, absolutely. Okay, I want to switch gears here. And yes, pun is intended. I've heard a vicious rumor, and it's no more than that, that you have a bit of an interest in hot rods. Tell us about that.
Oh, I'm an old motorhead. Absolutely. And there's a certain point in my late adolescence where I became disenchanted philosophically as much as anything else with an oscillating piston in an internal combustion engine. I still think that that is probably the wrong way to have gone for rotary motion. But yeah, I grew up building, I grew up in Wyoming. We were a bunch of hell-bent for leather, road racers back in the back on the gravel county roads, trying to build us a drag strip. I built a couple things from the ground up, take an old Model A Ford and scrounge around the junkyards and find a big late model overhead valve V8. Stuff it in those old suckers. They'd go like a frog. The first 100 feet, you couldn't even see them. They were so light and so powerful. So I could take these little sweethearts that I put together in a neighbor's garage and go out and eat up a new Corvette. And I was doing that for the girls too, Simon. So, I followed the drag race circuit. I was a pretty good drag racer now, too. I was a fast talker. And they liked me, so I followed for a couple of summers the drag racing circuit announcing them. And I was the regional advisor up there for the National Hot Rod Association. I still know a lot about the basics, but it's passed me by. These people out here at Bandmere Speedway in Denver that are going, 325 miles an hour in like 5.5 seconds, that is beyond anything I ever had possibly fathomed. Yeah. So you're safer with a guitar and a six-pack of beer. You're not as likely to skin your knuckles.
Right. I think the guitar and six-pack of beer is definitely a lot safer.
Well, it depends on how many beers you've had. and where you're having them. You might be as likely to get a tooth broken as your knuckle skinned.
Oh, yes, there is that possibility. Actually, I have a friend who's a musician. His genre is Americana, and he loves to tell the story about his life before music. He was a semi-pro boxer, and this is kind of done the round. So these days, I won't say it's a common occurrence, but occasionally he'll play a club and there'll be some guy that loves the music but just wants to take a swipe at him.
Oh man, welcome to the world. Well, he can defend himself. He can defend himself against the heckler. Then, if he was a boxer, he probably still has a little bit of that instinct left.
Right. He said that it's not his favorite thing. He just wants to play his guitar and sing. He doesn't really want to put the gloves on.
Well, Ernest Hemingway said that every once in a while someone will come along with the left hook that'll knock you on your butt. And he said that life is the best left hooker in the world. Yeah.
Yes, that is a true statement. where can people buy copies of Low Bid on a Dream?
Well, I'll be standing down here at the corner of Colfax Avenue and Washington Street with six of them after we finish. And I'll have to have my collar buttoned up, but I'm just kidding. You know, we're set up with not a terribly wide stance. It's all a very new project for us, and certainly for the moment, Amazon.com and CD Baby. We'll have them under David Michael, and the title of the album is Low Bid on a Dream, which is just the title of one of the songs that you played while you were fishing for time, trying to figure out where I disappeared.
Yeah, let's talk about the title for a moment. Is there any significance? I mean, I rather like the title, Low Bid on a Dream. But there's got to be a story.
You know, it is. It's meaningless, but it seems to be an infectious figure of speech for a lot of people. It's so ambiguous. You know, it could come in on the plus side or the negative side. I'm not sure, but it has a good feel on the tongue, and it has a certain sort of underlying implication of complexity that you don't find in a lot of pop music. I don't know. So. Yeah, we love the song. And I like the song. I have musician pals that like songs, so I thought, well, we'll just talk on the CD a little bit on a dream.
I've got to admit, I looked at the CD cover, and I was thinking to myself, oh, what a great title. Boy, there's got to be some deep and meaningful story behind it.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish I could say there was something profound going on there, but again, that's just part of more of the flotsam and jetsam that is circulating around one's brain. And there it is, and that's Lucy on the front with me, the chocolate lab. She's a sweetheart.
Right. Is she a part of the band?
Yeah, pretty much. She. You know, if anybody tries to get any tips should happen to fall into my old top hat, she's in charge of shooing them away so I can clear at least $1.25 in tips per gig.
I should probably explain that for listeners. The cover art on the CD is just splendid. Jamie looks like he's just put down his guitar and the six pack of beer is gone, and he's just relaxing on the sidewalk with top hat on and dog by his side.
And then a hard talk with a dog. You know, sometimes that's the best place to go for it.
Yeah. Actually, I do apologize. I just accused you of being Jamie. I'm working with two musicians. There's you, David Michael, and there's another guy, Jamie Michaels.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, and then you have Billy James over at Glass Onion PR, and so you've got another name that sort of kind of confuses in there as well.
There you go. I talk to many musicians, and broadly speaking, I tend to put them into one of two buckets. There are those that love to be on the stage, and there are those that love to be in the studio. Which bucket do you like to live in?
Good question, Simon. You know, I think that if you are a virtuoso musician, you have an intrinsic love for the studio. You know, and I cannot claim any great virtuosity. I was getting up in front of crowds, you know, way young, way early. I'm basically pretty comfortable in front of a crowd and pretty much a ham bone. And I fancied myself an entertainer probably as much as a musician. And so, of course, in the recording of this disc, Simon, it was just such a wonderful, supportive environment that we were just, we just couldn't wait to get back into the studio day to day and just love being with those guys and hanging out with them. Again, Dexter Payne, who shows on tenor sax and clarinet and the wonderful harmonica you were referring to. It's wonderful. seasoned studio musician who was just a pleasure to hang about with, you know, all those guys. But there's nothing like performing. It was Janis Joplin that says that all you have is those 15 minutes on stage. And there are a lot of musicians who would agree with her. You know, there's something you get. You can finally bring in the sheaves after a lot of work when you perform. You know, you can start getting instead of giving.
So do you actually go out there and get on the stage?
Well, you know, Denver has a million bars and quite a few good music halls that are built around bar rooms and a bunch of good bar bands. So it's not really legendary for launching major worldwide acts. But there's a pretty bubbling under community, a hotbed of people playing in the bars and in the joints. And certainly that's the basic training for a higher level of endeavor. So I get out as much as I can. Yeah, I love to get out and play.
But, you know, I've talked to many musicians, and they all basically say the same thing. You know, even if they're studio people, there is nothing like the adrenaline rush of playing live.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Simon. And certainly, on the one hand, there is the din of a barroom, which has its own wonderful charm, and it grants you your license for about any kind of musicianship that falls out of you. And that can be very wonderful. Again, there's where the chicks are. But on the other hand, there's nothing in the world like having a concert audience raptly adoring you in silent adoration. There's nothing like that feeling. You know? So concertizing on the one hand, I mean, who wouldn't want to be doing that all the time? And then playing the bars on the other hand, which has its own reward. One of them is stumbling back to the van with your gear at 2 o'clock in the morning with half a load on.
This is probably why I am not a musician.
Yeah, the rewards are, it's a very thin broth. It's a very thin broth if you're a local musician, you know.
I was
going to say that the digital revolution has changed so much. It's changed your endeavor there in broadcasting. It's changed music, the way it's done, clear down to the street. You know, it's altered everyone's perception about how it's propagated. And that can be for better or for worse, depending on where you are in the food chain. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No problem. That's an interesting comment, because it segues very nicely into where I wanted to head next. I was looking at your resume, your curriculum vitae, and I see that you are no stranger to big media. You've been involved with all of the major players. I rather like live radio, you know, even though we have the occasional glitch. It's fun because, you know, you just never know what's going to happen. You've been involved in radio a great deal. Do you have any fond or unfond memories?
Well, I sure bumped into a whole lot of interesting people and, you know, spent a lot of years trying to slay the broadcasting dragon. Again, the digitalization of broadcasting and the satellite aspect of it kind of left me in the dust. I wasn't terribly interested in that. I had a chance to get around radio when there were some great, big, huge audience shares. You know, even when FM was still in its nascent stages, you know. It's a rough and tumble business. Simon. And there's me, some bitches. You know, it's a great place to go get a bloody nose, just to go into a top five market around property that's knocking out $85 to $90 million a year. You know, throwing softball. So it can be tough. But you get up there where you have a really big audience like you're maintaining now. So, and people who are trying to promote their efforts want access to your signal. And so I have wonderful memories of tons of Jimi Hendrix and, you know, Carl Malden and Emmett Neal, Armstrong, the first man on the moon. Tons of people, dozens and dozens and dozens of notorieties, which is great. I mean, a lot of quite part of what inspired me to work harder on my music is to discover how ordinary these people, all of them, really are. A lot of hard workers who have managed their image real well.
I also read on your resume some of what you class as memorable music, and I have to admit that I was a little taken aback when you mentioned Led Zeppelin. I'm just having a hard time equating you with Led Zeppelin.
When that first album came out, I was a younger, harder, meaner, darker-haired man, And I'm an old blues dog, and there's no denying that with those guys, I think the single strongest element in their foundation was this wonderful distortion of American Chicago-style blues. So the first side of the first Led Zeppelin album, You Shook Me, that stuff. So Willie Dixon tune. I loved it. LSD at that time, didn't hurt the experience.
Right. I'm only guessing here. I'm 54 years old or 55 years old. I'm assuming. I'm assuming that you're kind of in that age range.
Right in there. Yeah, right. Give or take 20 years. Absolutely. You're not wanting to get too close to home here, are you, Simon? I'll take my walker and leave the set.
a kindred spirit that remembers the summer of love.
Listen, in Cincinnati, I was doing a morning show, and this was before the summer of love, the year before the summer of love, 2011. I started promoting having a love den up in Eden Park. I said, come on. Let's all get together with the next wave, Sharon Orange with a friend, read a little poetry or something. Well, the place was overrun, this big lawsuit against the radio station. They had to bring lawyers in from the national office and the whole thing. And that's just great big over outpouring that anticipated the summer of love. There was a love-in, which I called it, held in Cincinnati in Eden Park, a great memory. But the idiots spray-painted graffiti on the band shell and stuff, and they made a fool of me. So I'm not saying I learned a damn thing, but it's another one of those useless memories that float around. Standing up with more valuable memories.
David, I hate to do this to you, but my producer is whining in my ear that our time is up.
Sure.
I really want to thank you for taking time to talk with us this afternoon, and I also want to wish you and the rest of your band and Lucy the dog every success with the CD. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Simon Barrett. I hope we talk again sometime. It's been wonderful.
Oh, I'm sure we'll talk again. Until next time, this is Simon Barrett for Blogger News Network, wishing everyone a wonderful day, and stay out of the snow. Till next time, goodbye.
Thanks, Simon.